Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. Each episode covers the brightest and boldest ideas from the world's leading experts in software development. Tune in for practical lessons, compelling theories, and plenty of inspiration. GoTo gathers the brightest minds in the software community to help developers tackle projects today, plan for tomorrow, and create a better future. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in cities like Amsterdam, London, Copenhagen, and Chicago, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Hello, I'm Hannes. I'm here with my two of my bandmates, Dylan Beattie, who is the mastermind behind what is the Linebreakers, and Vagif, who is our
hello
crazy pianist. I'll let you two introduce yourselves. Go ahead.
Cool. I'm Dylan Beattie, and we are the good folks at whatever. This is Yao, right? So it's Yao London at Codenode, which is run by Trifork, who also run Yao, and it's nothing to do with GoTo. Do I have that right?
Yeah, but anyway, it's all a little bit
you
GoTo
need to put Skills
anyway.
Matter somewhere in between.
No, then nothing to do with this.
No, Skills Matter is out of the picture.
They are conspicuously absent from every part of this particular event. So anyway, yes, we're at Codenode in London, and we're doing an unscripted session. And tonight we're going to be doing a show. We're going to be playing some live music. And the project we're going to talk about kind of is one of many things that I started putting together over the last sort of 10 years. And this one kind of grew legs. So we're going to talk more about that. And one of the earliest line breakers to come and sort of join in the fun with it was Vagif.
Yes, it was me. And it was a kind of strange coincidence because I discovered that we were two doing some strange songs and conferences. In my bio for this conference, it's a singing programmer, because actually what I was doing, a conference takes 2-3 days and it's technically intensive and people get tired. And then to entertain them a little, I started making some parodies on the topic of my talk. Then I discovered that there is another speaker who actually does the same and more than that, and also plays at after parties. So one day I approached him. I think it was NDC Oslo, and I said, well,
when 2016 or
yeah, around that.
I remember being there. It's the first time I saw Dylan do what he does, and I'm gonna let you explain in a minute what that is. But I was there as an attendee. I wasn't a speaker at conferences yet, and I think you did 4 songs at the time, right? And I saw you do that on stage, like, oh, this is amazing, which led up to me talking to you afterwards. But maybe for the people who haven't seen what you do, like, can you explain what the whole Dylan Beattie on stage doing music, what that is all about?
So where this all came from is Mark Rendell, who's also with Linebreakers, and he's going to be on stage with us later tonight. He and I occasionally run a comedy panel show. Because like Vagif says, you know, you have a conference, you've got a bunch of people, they're all there together for a couple of days, and the sessions during the day, they can be exhausting because there's so much information, so much kind of context and things to try out and, you know, really, really smart people distilling, you know, often somebody will be taking, 2-3 years of experience and distilling it into a 1-hour talk. And then there's this thing, like at the end of the day, you don't want to just send everyone out to go and get dinner on their own, because then you kind of break the sense of the cohesion in the community. So we're always like, what can we do afterwards that is still, you know, related to the reason we're all here? So something which has some tech and some software and stuff involved. And so Mark and I started doing a comedy panel show, and we found funny things on Twitter and made questions out of those. And one night we had a Twitter bot that takes news headlines from Google News, and it tries to make up new verses to We Didn't Start the Fire by Billy Joel, which is actually quite cool. It's called We Didn't Start It. And so go and check that out on Twitter. It's still going. And then we had a round where we put up a word, and the team said to tell us, is this a JavaScript framework or a character from the Transformers franchise? which is surprisingly difficult. And Mark said to me afterwards, he's like, do you think there's enough frameworks that you could rewrite We Didn't Start the Fire just with frameworks? And that kind of burrowed into my brain. And I was like, I wonder. And so I took a weekend and I made that just as a song. You know, I bought some backing tracks and I played guitar and I sang the lyrics over it. And the interesting thing, there's a guy called Jeff Atwood who founded Stack Overflow with Joel Spolsky. And he has a thing called Do It in Public. And, you know, Do It in Public is like, you know, the longer you work on something before you show it to the rest of the world, the higher the likelihood that you're going to get it wrong. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to have worked really hard on something which isn't right. And so, you know, it's the kind of release early, release often. But he's talking, I believe in the essay this came from, he's talking about, you know, developing as a speaker. And he's like, you know, practicing in your room by yourself, practicing to a camera is nothing compared to the experience you get doing something for real. Mm-hmm. And so every step of Line Breakers has been Do It in Public. So that first thing, I put the song out on SoundCloud and nobody cared. And nobody cared because people are very visual. And if you don't give them something to look at, they're going to find something else. So they'll be like watching TV with music in the background. They won't listen to the words. So I was like, I need to make a video. And the first one, I didn't know anything about, you know, post-production, didn't know After Effects. So I made it by doing a screen recording in PowerPoint and just literally whacking the space bar to get the letters. And if you see the show tonight, the video for We're Gonna Build a Framework is exactly that. It's that original.
It's still PowerPoint. That original video.
It was the first video for the first parody.
So that's first video, first parody. And then at NDC Oslo in 2016, I wrote lyrics to Money for Nothing by Dire Straits, which was I Want My NDC, and kind of name-checked all the speakers and the talks and played
you
that.
You did a keynote at the
That was a year later.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, so the first year, I just had these two songs. I had the Money for Nothing.
That was the year that who did the party keynote there? James Mickens.
James Mickens.
That was really good.
That was fantastic. We are the Scorpions.
Yes.
You'll get it if you watch the video. Right?
It's like one of the most fantastic it's party keynotes I've ever seen.
So yeah, that year it was PubConf. And it was literally, I had two songs and one guitar. And after PubConf wrapped and everyone had lots of free beer, which is a special treat in Norway. They don't get free beer very often, so they get stuck into it. I did that one and I did the Money for Nothing one. And that was it. It's like, that's all the material. And everyone's like, do another one. I'm like, I don't have any more songs. So,
and approximately that time, I did this version of Monad, which became now also part of Linebreaker, which emerged into the repertoire.
So then there was that. Then I don't think there was.
So how do you do that live? Because you were saying videos.
Yeah.
So maybe explain like what it looks like when you performed live.
So that first one, there was no videos to it.
Okay.
That first one, the first live show was literally just singing and playing. And but, you know, video became a big part of it because people are visual. They like something to watch. And so we started putting videos together. And the way it works, it's actually every video, there's about four or five different versions of it, depending which musicians are available and which songs they want to play on. So I have a Dropbox folder where I've got solo mixes for when it's just me. I got duet mixes. I got trio mixes. And so duet means that all the keyboards and pianos are live, and then trio means bass guitar is live as well. Mm-hmm. And when both of us are there, we double up the guitar parts, and it's all kind of very... and so actually after this, I need to sit down and work out who's playing which instrument where and make sure I got the right mixes in the show for tonight. But it's all done using the video. Now I make them using After Effects. Which is Adobe's post-production. And that was literally... You know, there's this thing where you work in technology where you're like, yeah, I can figure out any app. Like, you go on a new website, you're like, I need to book a ticket on a cruise ship. Well, it's like booking a railway ticket, only slightly different. Or I've got to use a different text editor, right? Where's formatting? And then sometimes you turn a corner and you're like, I have no, like, what is even, like, I do not understand any of the options in this menu. I don't know how it works. I have no mental model. And so for me, Adobe After Effects was like that. And when you figure it out, it's basically, if you imagine that you are running 10 copies of Photoshop simultaneously, and every one of them is being driven by a little electric monkey following a script of what effects to apply when and how to do that. And, you know, it's a wonderful package. You know, whenever the Linux people are like, oh, you should just run Linux, I'm like, talk to Adobe. When they get After Effects on Linux, I will switch. And so now it's got to the point, like, I have macros. I can put in the beats per minute of a song, and it'll give me keyframe markers on all the downbeats. And then you just align up everything so you get, you know, visuals happening on the beat and all this kind of stuff.
But how long time do you use now to make a great video?
About a week.
About a week.
Like, I'm talking like a week, like 40, 50 hours of work from having the idea to putting it together. And there's a backlog of you know, ideas, and it doesn't always work. You know, there's a couple that I, you know, we've done, and I've made the video and we've taken them out and played them a couple of times, and just the audience
never clicked with the audience.
Yeah. Just, you never get that. There's always a point when you're up and you're playing, and I'm sure you guys both feel this as well, where you just kind of look at and you're like, are they enjoying this, or are they waiting for this one to finish so they can see what's coming next?
I think that is the key to what makes this great, is that we take a song that everybody knows. Mm. And then there's the new lyrics, which are tech themed, always with a twist. Try to have some tie-ins to the original lyrics, and then try to make it funny. And sometimes the jokes just don't land.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's the wrong niche.
Yeah.
Like we did a...
You're thinking about Metallica, right?
Metallica was weird. So there's a version floating around of Enter Sandman, which... I was working on. A friend of mine said, what about Enter Stallman? Like, we'll make a parody about Richard Stallman. Yeah. And then while I was working on it, all this stuff came out about Richard Stallman being a sociopath and a horrible person. And, you know, very few people were willing to defend him as a human being in the light of everything that was going on. I was like, well, I kind of want to do the song now, but I don't know how to make it funny. And so it turned into a sort of a not really a comedy parody, more of like a protest song about open source entitlement. And it just, there's no jokes in it, you know? And the sort of the hooks on that. And I played that a couple of times. And it's like when people heard the Metallica riff, they loved it. And then when the lyrics kicked in, everyone went, oh, this is all a bit serious.
Yeah.
And it just kind of killed the mood. Also, it's a really difficult guitar solo to play. And the first couple of times I played that, I did not get it right at all. And eventually that one got sort of put on the back pile for a while.
Well, yeah. I mean, if we play all the songs that we have right now.
It's about a 2.5 hour set, I think.
Yeah, and that's without talking in between.
Yeah.
So. Like 20, 25 songs, I think, in total.
Yeah. No, there's always more ideas floating around. And
when you got from your solo doing songs at conferences, how did we get to the point where there's now six of us and we also have guest musicians?
So the whole thing started, like, every single step of this is somebody going up to somebody else and going, I want to do this. Mm-hmm. Or rather, I'm going to do this unless you stop me. Which is very much the way you get things to happen, because it's that's a lot of these kinds of events, people are very, very willing for you to take the initiative and add more stuff and everything. But there isn't really one person who's in a position to give permission.
Right.
So if you say, hey, can we do a show? Somebody's going to go, ooh, probably, but let me check. And then someone else. And whereas if you just turn up and go, hey, I see you've already got everything set up. You've got the sound, you've got the lights and everything. If there's a spare half an hour, I can take my guitar up. And at that point, as long as you're not messing up anybody's plan, they're normally like, yeah, go for it. And so the first couple of things, I kind of did that. And then we got chatting. Vagif came up to me so this is a year later. This is Oslo 2017. And it's like, I live in Norway. I also do parodies and I play the piano and the keyboard. And I'm like, right. And I think at that point we had about half a set. We had four or five songs.
Yeah.
And then we just played normal covers. So like the first half was, so Enterprise Waterfall, which is a Pink Floyd, Another Brick in the Wall. And that one came out of a drawing by David Neal, which I loved, which was just the white bricks. And he'd just written in the Pink Floyd kind of font on it, throw the code over the wall. And I saw that. And I was like, yeah, that's a song. And that one just, I mean, there's only six different lines in the whole song. It's not hard to rebuild. And we had that one. We had the Money for Nothing one. We had the Frameworks.
Yeah. You already had an idea about Billy Joel's JavaScript, but it hasn't materialized yet.
So that one came out of, we were in Baxter's Inn in Sydney at NDC later in 2017. Mm-hmm. And that song came on. And Baxter's Inn is like the only place in Sydney you can get a drink late at night. It's a little... And you take someone there for the first time, they think you're going to murder them. because you literally go down off the main street, you go into this little back car park that's completely unlit, and then you go down a flight of stairs and you bang on a fire exit. And inside there is this amazing whiskey bar. And that song came on the stereo there, and everyone was singing along. And I was just like, okay, this is clearly, there's a lot of love for this. And it was Todd Gardner was there, and he was working on TrackJS, which was his JavaScript bug tracking and reporting system. And I just thought that would work so well. Like, this song is perfect for There Must Be a Bug in the JavaScript. And yeah, that just, you know.
Which still holds true for everything today. I mean, poking fun at JavaScript, it'll never not be funny.
Well, it's, you know, I love JavaScript dearly, and I love working with it. I love building little applications. It's a fantastic teaching language. If you can't program something in JavaScript, you don't really understand it.
Right.
Like, I just built a ray tracer in JavaScript, which I've been running a series of workshops and stuff with. I actually did that with a Vagifs crew up in Norway a couple of weeks ago. Mm. Room full of people. And it's like, right, we're going to, you know, it's code, but it's fun. We're going to do 3D computer graphics. If you can't build it in JavaScript, you don't really know how it works. But as kind of enterprise language for running serious systems, it's horrible. It's dynamic. The tool chain is horribly unstable. Even like Ryan Dahl, who created Node.js, has now been like, I'm going to make Dino instead. The first thing I'm going to do is the package manager's built in, because having a separate one was so awful.
It makes a great parody, basically.
But people relate to it. You know, the best comedy is one where everyone in the audience feels like they experience, not just me, like, I get that. That's my life you're singing about.
And even when you're poking fun of them, it's like they still understand why it's funny. And
so there's always been a sort of rule of thumb with doing, because, you know, comedy is an easy way to accidentally contravene the code of conduct.
Right.
And, you know, I think that there's a very clear understanding between you can stand side by side with all of the audience and mock the technology which you use, or you can stand over here and you can mock them for using it.
Yeah, those are two different things.
Yeah,
one of them is personal and the other is fun. Yeah.
And, you know, JavaScript, if you choose not to use it, then I respect that, but your code is never going to run in a browser unless you jump through all kinds of hoops. And, you know, it's a standard. And partly the reason why it is so maligned and misunderstood and so easy to mock is that being baked into web browsers means you can't fix anything ever, because there's, what, 12, 15 billion devices now that run JavaScript in active circulation. You can't make breaking changes to that. It's the most successful programming language the world has ever seen. So,
apart from Excel.
Even Excel. I think there's more JavaScript than Excel.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, like, I don't run Excel.
I don't
on
have
my
the
phone.
Numbers on that. You don't
need
have
a spreadsheet.
Excel. We do.
Although Excel has lambdas now. Simon Peyton Jones, the Scala, Haskell, whichever one he is, went to work for Microsoft and put lambda as a first class citizen in Excel.
So. I've seen people using online spreadsheet tools as the database and like build an ORM on top of it.
Mm.
It's like have. Like poor man's databases use Google Sheets.
I mean, it is, you know, if you look at the JavaScript philosophy, we know JavaScript. Oh, now we need to build a server. Well, learn Java or C#. No, JavaScript. We'll run JavaScript on the server. Oh, we need a database. Well, here, this is the relational model. This is SQL. No, MongoDB, JavaScript in the database. JavaScript, all the things. And yeah, okay.
But coming back to Linebreakers,
yes.
The first time word name Linebreakers was used, I think, was at NDC London.
It was.
It was one of the few times where there was a real the band actually with a live drama.
Yeah. So
where did the name come from?
Todd Gardner. He needed a name for his PubCon publicity stuff.
Right.
And he just came up with, he's like, okay, well, it's a parody of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Dylan Beatty and the Linebreakers, which I would never have put my own names. That was not me. And, you know, sometimes people are like, but surely you're a Linebreaker. So I'm like, it wasn't my thing. Just it stuck. And
technically, it makes you not a Linebreaker.
Well, yeah.
Because Dylan Beatty and Linebreakers. We are Linebreakers.
We are Linebreakers.
You're Linebreaker. I'm not. I'm just Dylan Beatty. So. But no, that one was... you know, we sort of pulled out all the stops for that. It was PubConf London 2018. And we got a Joao, who's a friend of mine from London, who's also a phenomenally good drummer and does
drummer
stuff and things. And we're like, let's put together a full live band show. And, you know, we did. I've actually came over to London. We did a couple of days rehearsal. We got a friend of mine.
Yeah, I flew to rehearse.
Yeah. And it kind of worked really well, but the amount of effort and logistics that it took to make it happen was just, you know, I remember it took us about 4 hours just to set up the equipment for it. Because we rock up to the pub.
And more than half of it went on drums, probably.
Yeah.
Live drums are like,
yeah,
in a setup for a gig,
yeah,
that is, yeah, the thing that will cost you the most time.
But then you also have, so the technical complexity, as well as having to set up all the equipment, the technical complexity is that the video is synchronized. And the video, you know, if you've got a live drummer, the drummer needs to play to a click, which means you need a different mix of the backing track, yeah, to give you the tempo, mm-hmm, so that the drummer follows the click. And when we've done it, we all had the click.
We were wearing.
Yeah, all of us were wearing wired earbuds, and all of us could hear, which means you can't really hear the audience so well, and you can hear yourselves. It's quite a nice setup. And if somebody loses the click, then the whole thing just starts to drift a little bit, and you can feel it falling over, and it's really hard to get it back on.
And, because that's the advantage of the current setup. Like, yeah, the backing, yeah, tracks, drums, all of that is, yeah, mixed in with the video.
Yep.
That'll play, and whether we're along or not,
yep,
the song is moving forward.
Yes.
It gives us the big benefit that the audience always sees the lyrics to the new thing that we did. It's like, yeah, the your favorite song that we ruined by putting new lyrics on it, you can actually see what those new lyrics are,
yeah,
while we're playing it. And I think that ties into the success, yeah, quite a bit. Because it always clicks with the audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, probably one of the things we learned from that concert was that the amount of things which could go wrong was so big.
Like,
it made an end with so few rehearsals, because we are agile, our live performances over rehearsals, and then you have to really balance it. And one thing which also I learned while I was doing some thinking programmer, once I did a parody on The Queen, and it was I'm Going Slightly Mad. And of course, I'm in no way singer with vocal like Freddie Mercury. Then I was reading that conference, people could leave reviews. And then one review was, well, that was okay, but he's not Freddie Mercury. Why did he choose this song? And then I actually realized that even though it's funny, people enjoyed it, but you really have to think about quality. Yeah. You really have to think about what you deliver, and you have to plan it. So we have to minimize this point of failure so it will look professional.
Well, at least it will feel professional to the audience, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting, you know, the word professional, there are two different kinds of professional musician. And there is a vast gap. At one extreme, you have somebody who sometimes they get paid to play music. And maybe, you know, once or twice a year, they'll get booked and they'll do a gig and they'll get paid a little bit of money to do it. And then at the other extreme, you have somebody who makes enough money from music that they don't have to do anything else. Music, right, pays all their bills and mortgage, yeah, and, you know, whatever else. And so, you know, I've almost consciously always been like, no, Line Breakers is, you make
the
this
first
an event
kind of professional.
Well, not even that. It's Line Breakers is, you make this an event that all of us want to attend as speakers who work in technology. Mm-hmm. And you do that, and then we will give you the show.
Right.
Because the problem is, you know, like you're saying about things that can go wrong. You know, professionalism. When we do this internationally, I fly with one guitar, and it's a headless travel guitar. And if anything goes wrong with it, I don't have another one, because I don't have roadies, I don't have a baggage allowance. So I'm not going to travel with two guitars. If the guitar breaks
That's
a string.
One of the things that I invested quite a bit of time, yeah, and effort in. It's like making sure that you only need to check a single bag,
yeah,
and able to fly. I used to fly with my Fender in a hard shell case. I got that bag broken on two occasions, like the case, not the guitar.
Yeah.
But that is one of the things that people don't realize is when Vagif flies in with, he probably has it worse than we have, because he has a piano and a guitar and his laptop, like, to be on stage with him, right? You fly with a lot of kit.
This time I have a single point of failure. My MacBook. I don't have a backup, another a keyboard. Well, actually, I have a backup because your own has also...
So when we do gigs in London, most of the equipment is mine because I own everything.
Yeah.
But that's a luxury we don't have in other places.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's also, London is a horrible city for logistics because it's like I own a car, but there's no way I can park at Codenode for 2 days. So I have to get everything into a taxi and bring it in and unload it. And then tonight, as soon as the show wraps up, everyone else is going to be going to the pub and I'm going to be loading all the gear into a taxi and getting it home, which, you know, kind of sucks. One day we'll get good enough to have roadies. But, you know, the jump from doing this the way we do it, if we get to the next level up, it's like, all right, you want a Line Breakers show, you've got to pay us however many thousand euros or whatever. And then it's like, well, now we have to deliver.
Yeah.
Like, we have to make sure we've got backups for the instruments. We need to be there, like, we need a proper day to, you know, three, 4 hours to set up and sound check. And at that point, it's a completely different thing. And, you know, I think we've always, certainly most of the time, done the best job we can without becoming a pain in anybody's ass.
And sometimes it's weird situations like this Copenhagen gig that we did 1 year ago.
Well, let's
which could fail in many different ways.
let's first go to the point where Dylan was gathering this band.
Yeah.
And I think the current formation we formed at the end of 2019.
So end of 2019, we had six people, the three of us. Don Syme was playing bass on all the stuff for us. Heather Downing was singing on about half the stuff. And Mark Rendell had written a couple of songs and was singing those with us as well. And we did, I think I did 8 shows in 3 months.
We played quite a few in like between, we did the two build stuffs and then we played London.
Yeah.
Also something else in between.
Yeah. Also, I came to London to play a couple of gigs so with you and Don.
We did Codebeam. Yeah. We did the Umbraco meetup here in London.
Yeah.
Kyiv, Vilnius. Me and Don played Halfstack in Shoreditch, just the two of us.
And then we played like a duo gig, like first week of COVID on a cruise ship, like beginning of March 2020.
Yeah. Well, first there was NDC London. So we did London 2020. And then they booked us to do a DFDS sponsored go-to conference on a cruise ship, which was everyone's going, no one's going, somebody's going, are we going, we're not going, it's cancelled, it's not cancelled. This was literally the week that the COVID hammer kind of came down around the world.
And stupid us, we decided to show up anyway.
Well, I had literally just started my own, you know, my own business doing speaking and training and
good this timing.
I know. Like, I started that at the end of January 2020. I set the company up and it was full. I had invitations. I was going here, going to Ukraine, going to Greece,
a whole band tour planned for that year as well. It's like, and at these 8 or 10 conferences, we're going
to
play gigs.
I was not in a position to start canceling the first work I'd ever got. And so, you know, a keynote for that is like, well, I'm going to go unless they cancel on me. If they cancel on me, I can probably hit them up to pay me anyway. But that was rough. You know, it was really difficult knowing what the right or wrong thing to do was. And so we went and
had a great week.
You know, we got lucky. It could have ended very, very badly, but it didn't. Everyone did it. We had a great time. We all made it home safe and healthy. And then that was it. They grounded all the flights, shut all the airports, and Amazon sold out of webcams and green screens.
Yeah, that was the beginning of COVID for all of us. Yeah. Like, we hopped on, organized through your Slack.
Yeah.
All of us bought like cheap green screen kits of Amazon and proper webcams and audio interfaces and microphones or whatever. It's like, we started playing with that stuff even before the first digital conferences happened, so that when they did, we were ready to participate and help the other speakers out and whatever. Yeah. So a lot of the time that we spent in that period was on that site. Hey, I've played with this and
I remember
tips and tricks with OBS Studio. And
March 2020, we were running 3 meetups a week.
Yeah.
Lunchtime meetups with guest speakers just to give people a chance to figure out how to do stuff online.
Yeah.
And we thought it would probably last 3 months.
Yeah.
You know, I remember watching the things. NDC were forced to start doing some hybrid events.
I think Porto was the first.
Porto was the first one that NDC went completely online.
Yeah.
And then Oslo, that was 2,500 people on Slack. That was Yeah. And, but anyway, so then tell them what happened in Copenhagen.
We are at a point where the first like in-person or hybrid conferences have started happening.
Yeah.
And like, as you can deduct from the cruise ship story, we're not the kind of people who sit around at home and wait it out. It's like, as soon as this was happening, we wanted to be there. And I think it was Vagif and me and you and Mark.
Yeah.
That, like, that was going to be the first in-person Linebreakers gig that we had done in a year or so.
Yeah.
At Go to Copenhagen.
Yeah.
Yeah, what happened, Dylan?
And
I was there.
I was there.
Yeah, I was at home. I had COVID. And this was back in the days when if you got COVID, you weren't allowed outside for 2 weeks. Not like now, where if you get COVID, they just ask you, please, not to cough on any old people or something. I do. I mean, I find it strange the way it's not like the human species has got any better or the disease has got any weaker. But just everyone's attitude is like, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was when there was still, you know, you had a positive test. They suspended all your phone vaccine records and you couldn't travel. So I was stuck at home. And we were supposed to be playing a show.
It was just 1 or 2 days before a conference.
It was 2 days before, yeah. The show was Tuesday night. And I got sick on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, positive test. And I was like, oh. And that was the point where you're testing every morning. It's just a matter of routine. Like, yep, negative, all right, go to work. Negative, go do this. Negative, go here. Negative, go. Oh, that's
not
bad.
Negative.
that's what the two lines looks like. So, and I can't actually remember whose idea it was.
Well, we were finding ourselves at Go to Copenhagen, yeah. But this was a really weird Go to Copenhagen. It was the first one I ever went to, but you could feel.
For me too, yeah.
In the audience, like, this is not business as usual yet. Like, people are masked, like, people are really careful in the venue, but yet everybody is really happy that some in-person things are happening again. It's like, you can talk to real faces, cool.
Yeah.
And we started talking to the go-to people. It's like, yeah, what are we going to do? I mean, they put in a lot of promotional effort into marketing the Linebreakers.
They even
printed
the poster, but it really touched me. It was a big poster with all our faces in there, and that was with like a part of this concert. And then, oh, are we going to miss it?
They like, this takes place in a movie theater, and they had used like the poster frames where they put all the movie posters up to announce all the speakers, but also like every three posters there was like a Linebreakers gig poster as well. So it's like, it would be a shame if we do nothing at all. It's like, how are we going to make this work? Because Dylan is our front man and he has all the videos. And it's like, if he's not there, it's like, we can play the music, but we're not used to singing all the vocals. So, but then our COVID experience, like all the green screen, audio interfaces, webcam, streaming kicked in. It's like, wait a second, we cannot do like bi-directional live
music.
What
I'm trying to remember at this point, what year was that? Because it's all kind of mashed together in my head. But that must have been
November 2020.
It's 2021.
2021.
Because we already, it was exactly 1 year ago.
All right.
Because December 2020, like the end of the first year of lockdowns, I did a Christmas party, which was a YouTube stream.
Completely YouTube stream.
Which was, you know, pulled out all the stops. And like, I had furniture in my study at home covered up in green screen fabric.
Yes.
So that you didn't see it. That. And so I could snap my, and I was snapping my fingers like this. And I had OBS stream deck in the other hand on my phone. So I'd snap fingers and a chair would appear. And then I'd sit in it. And then I'd snap my fingers and a table would appear. And I'd put down a glass of champagne on it. And
I think I also recorded a video. So you were sort of, I was playing
there was bits where I'd kind of cut from live to recorded so I could run next door and change clothes and come back. And, and you know, that was kind of the high watermark. That was, let's see how much of this. And, you know, it's at least I thought it was. Then I saw Bo Burnham's Inside on Netflix. Yeah. I was like, no, that's the high watermark. But it's that whole thing of you got to do this all yourself.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy doing online streaming stuff when you got one person doing the cameras and somebody else checking the sound and somebody else doing the, you know, logistics and switching angles and producing it. But when you're doing the whole thing on your own, you got to set it up on your own. You got to run it on your own. It's all live. It's all like that.
All you had was a cat that was working against you instead of with you.
Yes, I did. I had a Lionel would come in and go to sleep on the green screen floor, and I'd have to pick him up and move him out frequently. So we'd done that, or I'd done that bit. And it's like, I can probably send you my part of the performance as a live private YouTube stream in high definition.
Yeah, because like synchronous music were like bidirectional, where we would jam with a band over the internet. That is not a thing.
No.
Right? That there's no way to make that work.
There's a thing called Jamulus, which almost works with people who are geographically nearby. I've done a couple of things on Jamulus, and with other people in London who are on wired broadband with no Wi-Fi in the signal chain anywhere, you can get that down to about 15 or 20 milliseconds.
Which is close enough.
Which is close enough that you can rehearse together and you can hear each other and that kind of stuff.
Just as a frame of reference, like 25 milliseconds is about what you can hear as music being out of sync.
Yeah.
And there's no way to get the latency, like from me recording, parsing the video, sending it to Dylan, where he plays and sends it back to me, where that like is in sync enough. Yep. Like there's no way to make that happen.
What is minimum latency in that scenario?
Yeah. So
how long will it be latency in that scenario?
Well, just for the electrons to travel any significant distance, it'll be
speed
more
of light between, you know, the Belgium and the UK. It's too much.
So we're never going to get there. So we already realized that, like band rehearsals during COVID, not a thing. We would just study our own songs. Yeah. Like prepare for the moment that we could do it live again. The moment comes, he's stuck at home with COVID.
And then we figure out, what if we only do it in one direction?
And that is when we started talking, I had plenty of phone calls with you that day, like talking to the organizers, talking to you, talking to Veggie. It was like, what can we do? And luckily enough, I did have the audio interface that we both use, like the Yamaha AG06, which is a magnificent little device.
That's fantastic.
It's both an on-premise audio mixer. It's also a PC interface.
Yep.
And you can do bi-directional audio, like from that thing to the computer and from the computer back to the thing. So it is very, very flexible.
Yeah.
And I had that with me. It's like, okay, if we can get a stream, that's what we landed on. You said, I can stream myself.
Yep.
In front of the video, in a way that the audience can see the lyrics, and I'm singing, and you have the backing track, and all you need to do in Copenhagen is play along to
that. Play along, yeah. This is what we did.
Now, play along to that turned out not to be so simple, because we went, it's the first time we had ever undertaken anything like this.
Yeah.
So we asked the go-to people if we could have the venue for the afternoon just to set up, try everything out. First thing we realize is the Wi-Fi at the venue auto-disconnects every 20 minutes. And it only has like 2 megabits of bandwidth, which is cutting it really close for a YouTube stream. It's like, I didn't feel comfortable doing that. 5G reception, on the other hand, was pretty good. So I figured like, okay, I'm going to activate a package on my phone, make sure that I have enough data.
Unlimited data
for the week. Probably cost me 50 euros or something. Doesn't matter. And like stream it all over my phone, because they do have really, really good 5G in Copenhagen, like 500 megabit-ish, like really fast. So it's okay. That's the internet connectivity part sorted. Then we needed to set up the computer to actually send everything to the projectors that we had, send the audio to the audio interface, get that hooked up to the speakers and to the monitors that we were going to use. So that was, because we know how the thing works and we're comfortable with it, that wasn't too hard to do. And then we had to mix our instruments in. And then the fun bit that I remember is like, at some point you asked me, like, how big am I on the screen? And you scaled yourself in OBS Studio so that on stage you appear to be the same size as we were.
As we,
yeah. Right.
That was fun.
And we made all of that work, and then we tried and we figured it out. It's like we set up a webcam so you could see the crowd's reaction, but only like 5 seconds later, because like weird. The YouTube stream added latency.
Yeah.
So we could play along, but you couldn't hear it back.
Yeah.
And all that pieced together. And Vagif and I spent the whole afternoon like getting all the little things.
But
and
our live experience was rewarded because we had audience yes. for us. And you heard it all, like with everything with 5 seconds delay. Also stuck with COVID.
Yeah. So it was the weirdest feeling because, you know, you play the show and I can't see anything, but I'm like, it's loud. Like I got it cranked up and I'm enjoying playing. Gets to the end and I'm like, all right, thank you very much, everyone in. And I switch off the camera. I'm like, all right, guess I should do the dishes, I suppose. It's such a strange experience. So,
and yeah, well, we did make it work without a hitch, except for like 1 second that the YouTube stream froze. And my reflexes went just like, I'm going to hit F5 on the browser. So I just walked to the laptop, pressed F5. Yeah. And the music picked up again, like almost instantly. And we started playing like some people in the audience didn't really notice. Like we only missed like 2 or 3 seconds. So they saw it as like a little hiccup. It's like that was actually during the gig. That's the only technical difficulty we had.
And also for many people, it was the first live gig they went after the corona. Mm. So somebody came after the performance and said that, no, maybe it's because it's the first time, but I think that's the best gig I've ever been. That, no, that must be just because it just opened up. But then it means that it wasn't that bad.
It was the first time that we did a proper line breakers show for any go-to conference, except for the boat one, which was a really weird one anyway. So it still worked for the audience, but well, we did it again the week after because you were still stuck at home. We did it again in Vilnius.
Yeah. Vilnius was more ambitious because we knew it was going to work.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, when we did it in at Copenhagen, I was actually not feeling well. I was seriously, like by the end of it, I was sweating and shaking. But a week later, it's like, I feel fine. I just can't, I'm not allowed to go out. So we did the full show, like an hour of stuff.
And that worked surprisingly well.
Yeah.
But if I never have to do it again, that'll be fine too.
Absolutely. We did this and that was enough.
So. It's like we now know that we can and that's enough.
So we're really looking forward for today's real live show when we all will be standing on stage singing.
Can you tell the audience a little bit about the glasses that you wear on stage? Because you have like the weirdest combination of illuminated glasses.
Yeah, it was again. It's a part of thing that like it has to be entertaining. And then I must say, I was really inspired by nude pioneers from Monty Python. But then probably that's a bit too much if I enjoyed it on stage. But it needs to be. And also, I like really sort of moving on stage. That that's really no.
That's makes true. If you want to see a pianist who never stands still, that like that's flaggy for you.
And then. First gigs I did just with plain glasses, and now it need to make something more like that. And then I found actually some Norwegian web shop where they sell these things where you use on some parties. I found that's some LED glasses. And then the next thing was that I found glasses you can program, and then I. And the ad, it was like with a dollar sign. We had a parody, it's called blockchain.
Yeah.
Oh, I must use that. And then when I got them from AliExpress, then, I can program it. So I program, I want my NDC for NDC conferences and then HTML. And of course, even though I was traveling this time relatively light because Dylan broke his keyboard, but these glasses I had to take. Mm-hmm. And of course, when we are going to play HTML, I will be doing these glasses.
So yeah, you now have programmable LED glasses. How much can you see through those?
Well, with this HTML type of glass, I don't see much. But it's HTML. It's a parody on AC/DC highway to hell.
Yeah,
I play like a half song, mostly in refrains, and it's really simple part. If it was Java, the bug in JavaScript, no, I wouldn't manage to do it in those glasses. So I need to change them then.
And then apart from the glasses, you don't just play the piano. Sometimes you bring out the red thing, right?
Yeah, guitar. Yeah, it's another I'm as a keyboard player, I'm jealous. Because you guys, you have this guitar.
We can move around by default.
Yeah, you look so good. And then, so I was thinking, okay, I need to find something. But again, we're traveling. So if I buy something, there's a great guitar by Roland.
But is that the AX7?
Yeah. But it's a big one. And then you can't really check it in. You have to pay for oversized luggage. And then, okay. Every time I need to travel somewhere, I need to like 100 pounds per way. And then, so I had to plan what I can get. And then this guitar from Alesis, it's really nice looking. It's only a keyboard. Then I need to drive it.
It has this proper 80s synth rock vibe to it, right?
Yeah. Also, it matches glasses really well.
Yeah.
And then I found that actually I put it into this bag, which is if you sum widths and lengths and depths, it will be around 152 centimeters, which is exactly what you're allowed to check in. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you need to pay oversize. So, as Dylan is saying, like when you travel, you really need to plan carefully what you bring.
Oh, I know.
But you don't need to check in now anything. You just...
No, now everything fits into... Mm-hmm. One like big duffel bag, and that is the spec that I started with. So I found like the biggest like bag that I can just throw stuff in. It's like, okay, that's 83 centimeters.
Yep.
I'm gonna work backwards from that. So I had 83 centimeters. So I made the guitar case is 83 centimeters. Yeah, as a hobby, I build guitars. So that is where it is going.
So there's a whole video about this on the Unscripted channel as well.
On the Unscripted channel as well. So I worked from the 83 centimeters and got like, okay, if I have like wood and padding, my guitar can be this large. Okay, can I fit like a full Fender scale length on that? Like, yes, I can. So all the concessions, like all focused at that. So I built the lightest, most compact guitar that I could build, did a Visual Studio inlay in it because I want the guitar geeks to come up to me and talk about, like, what is that you're playing on stage? So I worked back so everything would fit in a single bag because I had an experience of checking in my guitar and like, cracked cases. That's something that really does happen. They do throw around your guitar even when you check it in with the outside luggage. And I'm finally rid of that because now I just throw some clothes in the bag, then the guitar on top of it, some more clothes, and then I have one bag that I can quite comfortably check in and be assured that the guitar is not broken on the other side. Actually, that bridge, the fact that it doesn't have a tremolo, it usually comes out of the case in tune. So that's really nice.
I heard about a wonderful hack for traveling with rare and expensive guitars, which is you get a special case made, which has a little pocket for a starter pistol.
Yeah.
And then you turn up to the airport and you go, I'm transporting a firearm. And they go, all right. And you go, here is my gun case. And they're like, all right, you have the paperwork and all this kind of stuff. And they open it up and then they close it and you lock it and they lock it. And then they look after it because they do not want to be the people who lost a gun on an aeroplane.
Right.
So that might be one to remember for next time.
It would involve getting a gun, though.
Well, a starter pistol is in that gray area where it's not dangerous because it's the one they use for starting races, you know.
Okay.
But it still uses gunpowder, so it's still classified as a firearm as far as the airlines are concerned.
So. Oh.
I'm not a lawyer. Check with your own advice before you do this. But I found that on Reddit, so it must be true. So
right. And now finally for tonight, we are back to like rehearsing together, playing together, being on a stage. It's going to be proper good. I think it's the first gig we've done in a while, and it's nice.
Yeah. Because we were at Build Stuff.
Yeah.
That was like, what, 3 weeks ago?
3 weeks ago. Yeah.
But in London, I think it's first after the pandemic.
No, we did NDC. NDC London was in May.
We did that too.
But we've forgotten about that because the sound was so terrible.
So yeah, now the biggest problems that we have indeed is like sound checks and proper. So that's the next bit of engineering that we might need to look into.
I find it astonishing that, you know, you look at digital innovation, like mobile smartphones, look at how those have transformed in the last 30 years. Then you look at the state of the art in live music performance. Mm-hmm. And no, the best we've got is still a really massive heavy box with a huge magnetic speaker in it. Mm-hmm. Whole thing weighs about 30 kilos. You put it up on a pole, plug it in, and then spend an hour trying to get it all balanced properly. Mm-hmm. And
there was some innovation in mixers, though.
There has been, but...
But not as big of a transformation as going from a corded phone on the wall of your house to like what the supercomputer that we have in our pockets.
You know,
right
now. I dream of the day when I can walk into a venue with a guitar, switch the guitar on, tap button, it pairs with the whatever equivalent of Wi-Fi is, and that's it. It's coming through the PA, it's mixed, it eliminates feedback, but never going to happen because there aren't enough people who need it to make it worth investing in solving the problem. So we have cables.
And that's fine, because if we use cables, we're in the same room and we're going to have fun.
All right.
All right. I think that's our plan for tonight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks for listening, folks. That was fun.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech to discover lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.